When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
I gotta say, I'm enjoying today's reaction to Shane Lowry winning the British Open almost as much as I enjoyed him actually winning the thing yesterday. It's unbelievable stuff, although I do feel some sympathy for the fella. He had less than 24 hours to bask in the limelight before his own granny stole his thunder with a sensational media performance, which you will hear on today's podcast. Hello, welcome to Monday's Second Captain's Pod. Hi, Murph.
Hello, Owen.
Hi again.
Hi, Owen, how are you?
Happy Open Celebration Day.
Indeed, and to you. There was a bit of concern, I must say, around Port Rush on Thursday night when it became quite obvious that after all the years of waiting to host this tournament, their local hero, Rory McIlroy, and the most famous golfer ever to play the game, Tiger Woods, would both be finished up by the weekend. But they needn't have worried. Firstly, McIlroy provided some thrilling stuff on Friday as he tried and ultimately just failed to keep his head above water. So there was more than something from McIlroy. There was a lot of excitement.
It was the most dramatic Friday evening in major golf history.
The most traumatic Thursday for the local fans and the most dramatic Friday. And then over the weekend, Shane Lowry, who may as well have grown up in Port Rush for all the support he was getting, turned in one of the most exhilarating Irish sporting performances anybody can remember for one of the most popular victories imaginable.
Oh, what a lovely way. A lovely way to finish. In the words of Henry Longhurst, that's possibly the shortest putt ever to win a great championship. And in she goes. Well, to some it's a dull, fuddy-duddy old game. But moments like this make you think. Honour, friendship, skill, the lot.
Peter Alice going deep there. The familiar voice of Peter Alice on the BBC, who had highlights every evening. I have to, just hearing the crowd there reminded me of that slight moment of panic I had just watching it on TV on the 18th when everybody started converging on him and the stewards, you could see the stewards were trying to rope it off and they had to get Lowry to hurry up because if you don't sprint and get under that rope and head towards the green. I don't know what we're supposed to do. The crowd would have been in at that stage. It would have been, would have got the job done. But it was just as well for health and safety that Lowry managed to skip under and get ahead of the crowd. And then there was a beautiful overhead shot. You could see what the stewards were worried about because there were just thousands of people converging, trying to get any angle they could on that.
Yeah, and there was, I think, a moment when he was walking off the 15th where
he was getting mauled
passage,
a bit, wasn't
yeah,
he?
The passageway from green to
keep your hands
to the
off,
16th.
Folks. Let him walk.
And you're just like, lads, this isn't done yet. I mean, I'm sure it's done. Like, obviously it's done. But at the same time, Jesus, like, the backslapping can wait. Like, he's literally, you're going to get a chance for the next 50 years to slap Shane Lowry in the back of the head. I was there in Port Rush.
It's not a big island. You'll find Shane Lowry at some point in the future.
God knows, really it's not difficult.
But it did look like a lot of fun. All right, Lowry was as impressive in his media duties afterwards as he was with the club in his hand. Check out this answer when he was asked, Shane, did you always believe you could one day win a major title? The stock answer here is yes, I always believed in my ability.
I suppose I didn't even know going out this morning if I was good enough to win a major, you know. I knew I was able to put a few days together. I knew I was able to play the golf course. I think the people around me really believed that I could, which helps me an awful lot. I do remember a lot of times in the past when I'm down on myself and serious chats with Neil, he always reminded me that he always said that I was going to win one, at least one, he said. So yeah, obviously, look, I'm Irish. I grew up holing putts on the putting green back home to win the Open. Like, it was always the Open, wasn't it? And I watched Paddy winning his two Opens. I mean, I didn't even know him back then, and I'm obviously very good friends with him. To have him there on the 18th, like, you go into Paddy's house and his claret jug is sitting there on the kitchen table, and I'm going to have one on my kitchen table now as well. So
yeah, beautiful stuff. Of course, I can claim my own small role in this great Irish sporting success, guys. I was there on Thursday cheering on Shane Lowry as he boomed a drive down the fifth fairway. Go on, Shane. Great shot. Even though I realised I haven't been to much golf over the years and I don't understand how people follow drives. Like, I hear the sound. Sounds great.
Yeah.
I kind of see the ball at the start. Then I generally lose it straight away. So I just look around me and wait for the more knowledgeable golf crowd to say exactly where it's gone. One or two of them have binoculars, true, but not everybody. In fact, not many of them. And yet they seem to follow the trajectory. The ones I found easiest to follow were the ones that went completely awry. You can kind of say, it just looks right. You can kind of say, oh, that's gone off into the. Anyway, like, I won't golf bore the hell out of you, Ken. There's more important things. I'm just saying I had a small role to play.
And well, and congratulations.
That's all I was looking for. I've got that. That's play. Perfect, yeah.
I understand, Ciarán, because I know you'd be too modest to say it, that you got a 5 on the same hole.
Oh, Jesus.
Rory McIlroy shot an 8.
This is we've gone full golf bore.
3 strokes better than...
Bore is a polite word for what many people are now thinking.
But I mean, it's a par 4.
I was obviously very disappointed with my 5 on the opening hole of Royal Portrush, but not as disappointed as Rory was with his 8. Ken, it's fair to say.
I'm loving all the reaction, all the various Irish sports people who are. There's this thing that's going on now. I think maybe a lot of them have done. Certainly, I've seen a couple of these where these Irish sports people are quoting, they're quote tweeting stuff that Lowry has sent them on their own big days and then tweeting back at him. So he tweeted Carl Frampton a few years back. This is after he'd beaten Leo Santa Cruz. That is all. It's like Carl Frampton, that is all. You know. So now Frampton is tweeting back on Shane Lowry, that is all. Johnny Walters, when he qualified Ireland for the Euros, Shane Lowry tweets, Johnny Walters, if I could get my hands on you. And Johnny Walters now sending that back to him. So there's a load of that kind of stuff going on. His fellow golfers seem to love him. I mean, what was it Pablo Larrazabal said on Saturday night? You like this one, Murphy?
Believe it or not, Shane Lowry is a better guy than the golf he is playing on Saturday evening during the... birdie it's assault.
Bloody poetic, that is.
Yeah, and it's such a nice... that's just a work colleague saying something unbelievably nice about you as you do something really good in the office. But and that's always a good feeling.
Rarely happens in here. But forget about social media. Were you about to say something there, Ken?
He seems like a lovely lad, Owen.
Larry?
I would only say that if he wants to win another major, he should make it a little bit closer.
Oh, yeah, because you watched the first 5 holes and you were like, well, this is done.
You probably watched none of the first 3 days, am I guessing correctly?
I watched none of the first 3 days, and I looked at my phone, and I said, oh, my God, he's actually, like, he's winning, like, by 4 shots. He's actually going to win, like, because I had heard people say he was doing well, but, I mean, that could have meant he was, like, 2 off the lead, you know, surrounded by other players. But so I realized, and then this was just around the time that I was starting. So I sat down and started watching it, and he like bogeyed the first one. But then, so I sat up a little, you know, further towards the edge of the seat. Then a couple of holes later, he was 5 up.
So you watched this great Irish sporting triumph, wanting there to be no great Irish sporting triumph.
I wanted there to be tension and drama, but then there wasn't. So I thought, well, you know, best look. I guess it's in the bag.
I get it. Shane Lowry's domination of world golf is boring to you.
No, that's
what you're saying, Ken. It bores you. He's a relentless winning machine, and you just want a little bit of excitement in your life.
You watched the last 13 holes yourself?
Oh, I watched a few more than that, Ken, I can tell you. Last at least 27, it didn't miss a shot. What did you miss? Yeah. Oh, well, a lot of emotion, actually. Which is something we'll probably talk about with our guest today. Because for whatever reason, and I count myself entirely amongst these people, people love Shane Lowry.
There was a moment after he won.
And we feel an emotional attachment to him, which is which goes far beyond that of regular fan and sports person.
He was walking around the green afterwards at some stage, and I think it was after he'd hugged his family and all that, so it wasn't that precise moment. He was just sort of on his own, about to greet, I think, his coach and all that kind of stuff. And he's just smiling. He has that broad smile. And I kind of noticed my wife was standing just behind the couch and I was sitting on the couch. And we both sort of said, at the same time. You know, just something...
Yeah, there's just something.
He had a Shane Lowry smile going on.
Yeah, that he didn't know what to do next. You know, he wins and where am I going? What am I doing? Oh God, the lid's about to fall. No, the lid's dead on. Brilliant. Oh Jesus, I won the Open.
Forget about social media. What about real world reaction? Quite hard to say those three words together. And there's nothing realer than what your granny has to say about you. Over to you, Emily Scanlon.
I hadn't slept last night. I hadn't drank a brandy since 2009. Drank 2 years and it nearly killed me.
Very proud granny, no doubt.
Oh, I am a very proud granny. Oh, I am. It's great to live to see all this happening, you know. We had a great whole life, poor life, but a good one, you know. And isn't that what it's all about? Keeping going. So. I remember his grandfather actually winning the... he won the Mullingar Scratch Cup. And he came home and I was shouting at him. He said, go out there and bring me in a bucket of turf. He said, you see to him? Shut up, Emmy. He says, you won't see... Tiger Woods bringing in turf. You know, he thought he was Tiger Woods when he won the Mullingar Scratch Cup.
You like that one?
It's just amazing.
I'd say she's almost certainly correct in that.
No, I just finished 72 holes and really hungry.
That would not cut any slack with Emily Scanlon. I can tell you that.
Shane Lowry's granny speaking to Kieran Mullooly on RTÉ News. Brilliant. Oshie McConville.
Yes, Ken, granny. Yes, Irish granny.
I might play a little bit more later on. Yeah. Because you seem to be enjoying it so much. Oshie McConville and Mike Quirker on the way later also to talk about the Kerry Donegal Classic and the Super 8s. We'll also ask those two boys a little about Lowry, because Shane Lowry is the British Open champion for 2019. Good times all round. Malachy Clerken of the Irish Times is in studio. Hi Malachy.
How are you?
You're beaming there.
Yes, beaming at the fact that I was here, last Wednesday, yes, and said, Shane, nah, missed the cut in the last four British Opens, you know, could have the week of his life, but nah, you know, I'd be looking elsewhere.
I honestly wasn't going to bring it up. There was so much else to talk about. I was going to leave the pettiness and those snide remarks, but you've done it, you know, self-effacing stuff there. Lawrence Donegan is somewhere in the wilds of Donegal, I believe, Lawrence.
Just stepped off the 18th green at Ballyliffin, shot a cosy little 97.
A 14 in any hole, David Duval style, or were you nothing that bad?
No, I wasn't that bad, but yeah. Seriously though, they had the Irish Open here last year, and a couple of boys shot 64 off the backs. I mean, it is a real eye opener. These guys are exceptionally good, as the PGA Tour motto goes.
Malachy, this was a popular victory, I think it's fair to say.
Oh boy.
Is there any one reason you can pinpoint as to why he is so popular, or why this just seemed to affect people in such an emotive way?
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about this. Like, had that been McDowell, would there have been that outpouring? Like, so I'm not sure there would. So it's not as simple as it
being... Well, on course there would have been.
On course, yeah.
He's the real local boy.
But that's not what you're talking about,
no,
really.
It's more of a bigger thing around the island.
You're talking about the country. And like the country this morning, it certainly feels very sunny, but is very sunny. Like everybody's kind of going, yeah, Shane, what a guy. So I don't know that it's more than it just being one of our own. I think it is, look... He's a desperately popular guy. He's, as they say, before Cheltenham, pundits are going through races, they go, yeah, it's very hard to pick holes in that favourite. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to pick holes in Shane Lowry, you know. Everybody, he has a big social media presence without kind of forcing it. It's kind of effortless. Everybody kind of... presumes he is how he comes across. He's a bit of a laugh.
And Ireland is small enough for everyone to know that it's not an act as well. Everyone knows someone who's met Shane Lowry and says he's exactly as you'd expect him to be. Thank God.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. And there was a great line in Eamon Lynch, who we talked about last week, who writing the sort of the preview of the Open with the troubles in mind. He had a great line this morning in his kind of his roundup of it, where he said that Lowry has the personality that he is the persona. Sorry, this is it. The persona that McIlroy wishes he could have, i.e., totally open, totally, you know, not worrying about, you know, making a wrong move here or there. And also the personality that Darren Clark thinks he has, which I thought was a fantastic line.
That is a good line.
But that's who it is. You know, people get the sense that they know who Shane Lowry is and they're just roundly delighted for him.
Even the way he approached the play, his own play yesterday, but in the interview afterwards, we've played a little bit of you know, of Lowry, but there was something that he said in his Sky Sports interview, Lawrence, immediately afterwards, when he was asked, oh, how did you keep your emotions in check? How did you, it was along the lines of, how did you stop yourself from dreaming of what it would be like to win the Claret Jug? And he said, I didn't. I absolutely didn't stop myself from dreaming it. I was going down the seventh or eighth, and I was, that's all I was thinking about was, what will this be like if I win it? And I really hope I don't lose it. And he said his caddy got him just back on the straight and narrow to a certain extent. He just said, look, just stay with me here. Stay with me for a while and we'll get this done. It's just, it's the usual, it's not the usual refreshing stuff, actually. It's incredibly refreshing because maybe all golfers do think that way, but wouldn't admit to thinking that way. Whereas he seems comfortable enough in his own skin that he can say, of course, I'm a human being. I was thinking this is going to be absolutely amazing and I was scared. And yet he still managed to play through all that.
Well, it goes to what Malachy was saying. There's an authenticity about him, isn't there? You know, if you or I were going down the sixth fairway on the last day of the Open, I think he said he was shitting himself. We'd be shitting ourselves, you know. And, you know, and it's natural to him to say that. It's a great line about it. He's got the personality that Darren Clark thinks he has, but clearly he doesn't. But I think that's what he is relatable. He plays golf. I mean, the swing isn't exactly homemade, obviously, and the talent isn't, it's otherworldly. But in many ways, we look at him and you think, well, that's me, you know. I could hit a shot like that, or, you know, I've done that. It's a whole package. And you're talking about his social media presence. Again, you know, so much of that in the world in which he lives is so calculated, and, you know, it's probably a lot of it's written by other people. I mean, you talk about Rory's social media. I mean, it's awful. It used to be good, but now it's very corporate. You know, it's all about Omega watches and all that. And Lowry's is not. You know, it's him. It's all about Offaly football and, you know, this, that, and the next thing. He's authentic, and I think that's why this victory has been sort of embraced by so many people.
He was talking this week about how he said he cares less about the game of golf, but he's not as obsessive as he would have been when he blew the lead at Oakmont a few years back. I presume that's to do with having family, and, you know, a lot of sports people say this, they have a different kind of focus in their life and all the rest of it. Is that really the case, though? Because you also hear the likes of Graham McDowell saying, this guy's the most competitive guy that you'll ever meet. Mm. You know, while it mightn't come across that way, he absolutely is. Is it something you think that he needs to tell himself that he cares less in order to then survive the pressure that he had in the final round?
It could be a bit of that, but it could also be the fact that he blew a 4-shot lead at Oakmont and the world didn't end. You know, okay, he fell away, fell out of the world's top 100. He went through some bad times. But, you know, the world didn't end. He got married. He had a kid. The daughter is, what is she, 2.5 now? Obviously a huge part of his life. He has that realization and was able to have it going into this week, and especially on Saturday night, that, yeah, blowing a 4-shot lead is a possibility. God knows he knows. But if it happens, him and Iris and Wendy will go down the road and he'll head to Memphis the following week. The world will not end. And I thought it was really interesting to hear him afterwards do his Sky interview on Saturday night after the 63. Yeah. And he was talking about, there was two things that really jumped out at me, and this is all mental gymnastics. You know, it's all mental gymnastics. You know, I believe you absolutely believe all of this, yeah, and good on you. But it's all mental gymnastics. One thing he said, which I thought was brilliant, was that he said to his caddy, he said to Bo, it was either coming off the 18th tee or coming off the 17th tee. I think it was coming off the 17th, where he was just flying. He was, every putt was going in, everything was going in. And he basically said, we'll never have this next half an hour of our life ever again. You know, not even worrying about Sunday. Sunday will bring what Sunday brings, but the next half an hour, these two holes of golf, you and me will never have this again. And like, that is purely a result of throwing away the four shot lead in Oakmont, isn't it? Like, when you think about it, that's purely the perspective of a guy who knows
that Sunday can be tough.
That Sunday can be a fucker. Like, and but like, today is brilliant. Look how well I'm playing. And the other thing that he said, and it was, I loved it, was where he was talking about how he was holing every putt and the greens were surrounded by the Irish crowd. And he was going, I was standing over the putts and I was going, yeah, like, I want to get this in because I want to hear that roar again. And you're going, okay, well, that's not how it works at all, Shane, yeah, yeah. But good for you, yeah, buddy, you know? like I want to hole a putt so that the crowd roars for me, but that isn't how it works. Like, yeah. But whatever mental gymnastics you need to get the ball in the hole, Godspeed to you, buddy.
And Lawrence, this is what we're talking about basically, is mental gymnastics. Because, I mean, we've mentioned it already in ways, but just Lowry's just smashing of all of the snake oil that passes for, you know, sports psychology, you know, that we've had to put up with for 10 or 15 years. Like the Conor McGregor, you know, I'm destined to do this. You know, it was written, therefore it has to happen. You know, I've visualized it, therefore I've made it happen. Like, you listen to Shane Lowry, it's like, did you always believe that you could be a major champion? I mean, someone served this up at the press conference, you know, expecting that, well, yes, I never lost faith. Shane Lowry said, I didn't know I could be a major champion this morning. Literally this morning with a four-shot lead. It's amazing.
Oh, no, it is amazing. But just going back to Oakmont, you know, losing the four-shot lead overnight, you know, on the Sunday, I mean, that's an experience that he took. And he talked about this after last night. You know, that's an experience he took to the first tee yesterday. I mean, he talked about trying to defend his lead at Oakmont, and the difference yesterday, I mean, it was a pretty defensive day of golf. But, you know, he went in there with a mindset, you know, I'm not going to defend this lead, you're going to try and stretch the lead, which when you think about it, makes absolute sense, you know. I mean, if you're going for birdies and make par, well, hey-ho, that's another hole down. But you are right, the whole mental gymnastics. But again, isn't it interesting how they all find their way and they find their way of expressing it? I mean, there is a kind of genius to the way that he did it, wasn't it, you know. You know, kind of homemade, again, authenticity about the way he fooled himself into to producing the kind of performance that he needed. It was, again, from a purely golfing perspective to a golf nerd like me, it's, you know, it was wonderful. But then you have the whole kind of, you know, I don't want to get to your social cultural thing about it. I mean, again, that's why I think it's reverberating. I've been hanging out with a couple of Americans this morning, and they're, you know, they are really, really into it as well. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, you know, stateside. I mean, I don't know if he's going to, I mean, I know he had a bad year on the PGA Tour last year. I mean, is he going to go back next year? I mean, who knows? Harrington's a big figure over in the States. Does Lowry elevate to that kind of level now of celebrity? It'll be interesting. Again, you know, it is amazing. And it'll be amazing to see what the guy does, because he's clearly hugely, hugely talented.
Yeah, it's funny. You focus a lot on Saturday night, Madigan, on Saturday's play. Mm. And I'd say in some ways Saturday probably was a lot more enjoyable for, even because Sunday was just so stressful and everybody's nervous. And he couldn't have failed to know that his dad was around the course looking, sure, like biting the nails, all that kind of stuff. And even then when he wins, it's, as he says himself, it's almost like an out-of-body experience, and I'm sure you have everyone pulling out of you. Whereas that Saturday, everyone's giving you a respectful distance. Mm. You get to enjoy the fact that you've just shot a 63. And in some ways, maybe the final day was about his mental strength, which he displayed for large parts of it. But just his pure golf ability on show on Saturday, like, I think I might have underestimated until quite recently, maybe until Saturday actually, how good Shane Lowry is. And it could be to do with the affability, the likability, the fact that oftentimes those aren't the characteristics we see in these ruthlessly brilliant sports people. But at his best, this guy, as he proved, is as good as anyone in the world, which is just wonderful.
Yeah, and he's particularly as good as anybody in the world.
In those conditions, in on that course. Yeah,
playing,
yeah,
that sort of stuff, yeah, yeah, you know? And like, he grew up on Esker Hills. If anybody has been to Esker Hills, it's not a links course, but like, the hills part of it is the key. Like, it is built on a load of drumlins and or down in Offaly, and it is like every shot that you're taking, especially around the greens, you have one foot below the other, or you're having to find your balance, you're having to pick the ball up exactly right and get it rolling. And that's where he learned the game.
It is in Ireland, this place, is it? You're talking this Offaly place. It's just, there seems to be some dispute about where he's from.
Well, quite, yeah. But that's where he learned the game, and that's his natural game, you know, and it's built from the ground up. I know exactly what you mean about Saturday, because there were times on Saturday, you know, that he was absolutely amazing on Saturday. It's one of, like, when you think about it, like, so Brandon Grace shot a 62 either last year or the year before. It was the first time a 62 had ever been shot in the major. So what Shane did on Saturday is still the joint second lowest round ever in a major. You know, he shot a 63 for the love of God.
About, you know, 25 guys that have shot 63.
I know, but yeah, but it's still, you know, it's still an amazing feat. The odd thing is, Saturday was, you know, it was nearly catching a wave. Like, it was, he had it, he was on it, he knew he was on it. Every ball was going in the bottom of the cup. In an odd kind of way, this is going to sound very golf hipster. Friday, from the first 10, 11 holes on Friday, I think is the best golf I've ever seen him play. He absolutely had it on a string. The morning players had gone out and a couple had gone ahead of him, so he had maybe 3-4 shots to make up, and it was just beautiful, perfect golf on that course for the first 11-12 holes. He kind of dropped a couple on the way in, but in a very modish, hipstery kind of way. That was my favourite part of the week. Saturday was kind of, it was almost just the energy of the moment, the energy of the crowd, everything sort of, the planets aligning so beautifully for him, and he shot a 63.
He says that he didn't know, waking up on Sunday morning, whether he was going to be a major champion. Lawrence, at what point, or did you, before this week, think Shane Lowry was a major winner? I mean, have you, like me, maybe underestimated his talent up to now?
I could go both ways. I've always thought he had the talent to maybe sneak one, you know, somewhere along the way. But like everybody else, I had no idea, Malachy, how good his short game is. I mean, it's just astonishing. You know, if you remember back in the day, Harrington around 2007, 2008, you know, his short game was just unbelievable. And I thought that's the best I'd ever seen. But I don't know, you know, he's not the best, the absolute premium ball striker. But you don't have to be if you're short games like that. So I've underestimated him in that sense. Do you know what he reminded me of, Malachy? He reminded me of John Daly in 1999 at Crooked Stick.
Yeah.
You know, just an unbelievable rhythm, unbelievable touch. Yeah. You know, almost, you know, it was as if he was floating, like he was floating along in the air all week. It was to me, it was very Daly-esque. And you know what? I mean, he's not a Daly-esque kind of guy or anything like that. He's a lot more kind of genuine than that, and a bit more stable than that, clearly. He has a chance. Well, he almost won the US Open, remember. I mean, he has a chance of a Harrington kind of, you know, maybe two, maybe three. That's what I mean. It's going to be so interesting. You know, I heard McDowell talking last night about, you know, he won one major and could only see one major. Yeah. You know, Rory won one major and can see 10 majors. It'll be interesting to see where Lowry goes. You know, does he want to win more, or is he happy with one? You would think, you're talking about his, you know, his genetics, his father, you know, very kind of athletic, competitive, kind of, you know, I would be inclined to think that he might want to go for, you know, might want to go again at some point. And clearly he's got the talent to win another one.
The fascinating thing, actually, you just mentioned his short game. McGinley did a great thing on the Sky Zone one of the days where he was talking about his short game, where he was saying, like, everybody has always assumed and known that Phil Mickelson has the best short game of, you know, anybody has had over the last 10, 15, 20 years. But McGinley was saying that Mickelson essentially has one shot around the greens that he modulates for each situation. It's that high dropping ball that's going to stop on a dime when it comes down. And it's amazing skill to have. Whereas Lowry has five or six different chip shots. And it's all dependent on where he puts it in his stance, how he holds it, how he grips, you know, different club, different for that. And it's that is the game that he taught himself. And it is purely self-taught. Now, it's, of course, He's much coaching over the years from Neil Manship down in Carton House. But that is the game that he taught himself, and that is the natural talent that he brings. And that's the sort of thing that should be. And like, I was wrong to gloss over him last week. He should be. Every time the Open goes to a pure links, that's, you know, he should be. That should be his thing. He should be up there.
Well, that explains then what Wayne Riley was on about, because I was watching the amount of times he referenced his hands, his soft Irish educated hands, and I was kind of like, what's this madman on about? You know, that's what he's talking about. It's, or maybe it's self educated.
No, he's essentially talking about that Larry gets the ball coming off the club face at different trajectories, different speeds, going to, you know, get more check on one ball that he would get on another, get more release on the other one. Like, it's all very boring golf stuff, but what it does boil down to is that he has that game. He has that ability to be dangerous on links course.
It's only boring golf stuff until they contend in a major, and then everyone jumps in and wants to hear about, you know, how do you actually.
I'm going to go even deeper. Yeah. He plays all his chip shots with one club, a 58 degree wedge, which is, again, is quite unusual. I mean, a lot of guys carry four wedges in their bag. You know, you need a club for the bunkers and all that, but every chip he has or every pitch he has, he plays it with a 58 degree wedge and manipulates the club face the way he wants. Again, that you're talking about McGinley on Sky. McGinley's brilliant, by the way.
Isn't he?
Absolutely brilliant. He's so insightful. But he was talking about Lowry, fading and hooking his chips. That's just incredible. So it's brilliant. And the kind of artistry of it is, he's just so relatable. And you know, and it's a bit like Rory. I mean, Rory's kind of muscled up a little bit, but he's still got that kind of rhythm that's so appealing to the eye. And Lowry's got the same kind of thing. He's just brilliant.
I don't want to underestimate what he did on Sunday, because I know we've been focusing a lot on Saturday. I guess the key early on was, you rarely see a player celebrate a bogey putt as Lowry did on the first, but it was important because it could have been a big swing there at the very start, and immediately then the demons are entering your head. There's no way to prevent that. If you're arguing in favour of an idea that maybe he was lucky in certain ways, it's that nobody else made a charge, and he acknowledged that himself. He was making mistakes towards the end of the back nine, but he was looking up at the leaderboard. And Brooks Koepka in particular, I presume if he was going to bed on Saturday night, he was thinking he's coming for me, maybe JB Holmes if he gets hot. And none of that happened, which made it this straight shootout between himself and Tommy Fleetwood. And I guess he was always confident with the cushion he had, I'm going to take Tommy Fleetwood, Lawrence.
Yeah, well, you're looking at Koepka birdie the last two on Saturday night, and you think, oh my goodness, here we go. But again, the forecast was always going to play in his hands, because essentially it was down to him and Fleetwood and maybe a couple more behind him, JB Holmes and Koepka, whatever. There's a few guys, you know, within three or four shots. But that was really it. But that weather just took everybody out of it. But the thing, he still played great.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but he hits a lot of fairways in terrible, terrible conditions. And if I'm Fleetwood, I'm kind of gutted. Because the other thing we can all underestimate about Lowry, he hits it pretty far. He's not short off the tee. And he was hitting it past Fleetwood a lot. You know, so that kind of gets to you. And it kind of wore Fleetwood down. And, you know, with everybody else falling away, it was, again, the weather. I mean, he did get lucky with the weather, but he put himself in a position to get lucky. That's the whole thing. And I thought, we haven't spoken about his caddy. I thought, again, we're talking about Sunday, but I thought especially on Saturday, I think it was the 10th hole where he talked him out of hitting a club and they ended up birdieing the hole. I think it was the 10th. But again, I thought the caddy did a really, again, Lowry referenced this last night, you know, I thought he did a brilliant job on Sunday. And it kind of all added up. He got lucky with the weather, but I mean, he certainly earned his victory.
Yeah, that's the caddy, Bo Martin, who's been getting certainly a lot of kudos, and they definitely have seems like a great relationship. On a broader level, there's a lot of tweets, there's a lot of reaction to this, and it's almost hard to know what to pick out. But I kind of liked Ron Nogara's tweet. I don't know if you saw this one.
No.
Like, he said, "Fuck this! Fuck all this! This is great for a small country lark. We have world class sports people all over the place. Lowry is the new norm. Kick on, proud as tonight with a lot of Irish flag emojis. This is now going to be a conversation about Ron Nogara rather than about Shane Lowry.
What
I guess.
Chippy fucker!
yeah. But I know what he means. People are always like, it's that thing of, it's amazing that somebody from, Dublin Clara. or Wexford, whatever. Somebody has won an Oscar or done anything. Everyone comes from somewhere. We're good at particularly at golf.
Isn't it amazing that an island with
a crazy amount of golf courses per capita?
Yeah, exactly. I remember talking to Derek Burnett, the Olympic shooter, once, and he, when he was going to Olympics every four years, obviously, but when he in the build up to an Olympics, he would move to Rome for 6 months. And I was like, why are you moving to Rome? He says Rome has more shooting ranges, or has the same amount of shooting ranges as Dublin has golf courses. And I went, oh my God. And he says, yeah, I have thousands of them. So we are an island nation with some of the best golf courses in the world. Isn't it amazing that we produce decent golfers?
But can I just interject a bit? You guys are, you know, a bit of Scottish. I mean, Scotland has a lot of golf courses as well, and it's very, very noticeable that Scotland right now is going through our complete dearth.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a question for me, why is Scotland not developing the number of world-class golfers that Ireland's developing? And it's an interesting question. And I think the GUI is, you know, whoever runs the kind of elite development program for Irish golf is doing a pretty fine job, you know. I'd love to know what the secret sauce is, because I could pass it on to Scotland. We're celebrating. Bob McIntyre, I think, finished tied seventh. Mm. You know, it's the highest finish by a Scot since 1996, I think it is, since Monty. It's but you know,
surely.
It's interesting. You know, why is Ireland producing so many world-class golfers? And it's not just a question of the number of golf courses.
Lawrence's dig at Paul Laurie there won't go on.
Sorry, Monty
in 2006. Sorry, not 1996.
Okay, I do want to talk about Rory McIlroy as well.
Sure.
Which we have to do now. Well, no, we have to do. We want to do. Because as ever, he's in some ways even more fascinating than Larry over the last few days. He was very emotional in his post-round interview after he missed the cut. Let's have a quick listen.
You know, part of me is very disappointed not to be here for the weekend. Sorry.
Tough. No, don't worry. It's clearly an emotional time for you. Just take a moment.
You know, so part of me disappointed, emotional, but happy with how I played. You know, the support I got out there was incredible, and you could see out there on the back nine, if I got that momentum a little bit yesterday, I went with it today, and you know, that's what I was planning to do all week. And as you said yesterday, give me a big mountain to climb. It's gonna hurt for a little bit, but this has been a week that I've been looking forward to for a long time. You know, I didn't play my part, but you know, everyone in Northern Ireland that came out to watch me, you know, they definitely played theirs.
Writing in the Irish Times this morning, Malachy Clerken writes. Great journalist. Ever read Malachy Clerken?
Yeah, he's good. Yeah,
I'd highly recommend.
Yeah,
McIlroy, free online,
frequently readable,
frequently readable. McIlroy choked last week. Everyone knows it. He'd be doing himself and his sport a big favour by copping to it and killing the taboo once and for all.
Yeah.
Would you explain a little further for those who haven't read the piece?
It was interesting over the weekend. Brandel Chamblee, who people would know as an American golf commentator, took the usual amount of shit on Twitter when he said, look, we got face facts here. Rory choked. He said it on Thursday night. And golfers and the golf community cannot bring themselves to go with the C word. And I have never really properly understood. Well, I get it to a certain extent, but it's like, it's such a ridiculous bogeyman to shy away from. Like, everybody knows what they saw. His whole demeanor was, he went into the tournament, this is the biggest tournament of my life. If I win this, this will be the biggest thing that I ever do in my golfing life. Nothing can ever surpass this if I do this. And on the first tee at Portrush, he put his ball out of bounds on the left. And on the 16th green, he three-putted from 3 feet. And what is that if that is not a mental collapse? That is purely the level of expectation that he had built up for himself crumbling in the face of it. Like, that is choking. And like, but my point, the point that the column is making is that it shouldn't be a terrible thing to say.
You shouldn't have to be ashamed of the fact that you choked. Just sometimes that is going to happen particularly in an individual sport.
Absolutely. The mental side of the game is a absolutely huge part of it. And some days you're going to go out and your driving is going to be off, and that's the reason that you shot a 75. And someday you're going to go out and your mentality isn't in the right place, and that's the reason you shoot a 79. That was the reason Rory shot a 79. It was a choke. He didn't choke the next day. He came back the next day and shot one of the best rounds I've ever seen. One of the most enjoyable. Like, I was roaring at the TV on Friday night. Yeah. The same way as the crowds were absolutely giving it. Like, that was one of the best pieces of theatre for the weekend. Like, it nearly made it. Like, I was kind of wondering, what else were they been showing for the... Like, had he just gone out and shot, you know, at a rudimentary level par round on Friday evening, the Sky wouldn't have been getting much viewership because there was nothing else going on.
It was the best Friday evening at a major I've ever watched.
Amazing, amazing. And all it was him trying to get down to plus one. Like, he was brilliant, and he is a brilliant golfer. He is not a choker. That's not, like, that isn't the point. Just because you choke doesn't mean that that you have a mental flaw that is unfixable.
But I think that's maybe what they worry about. If you start allowing the thought into your head that you choke at all, what is it? What is a choker? It's somebody who chokes regularly, and if it's, I think they're afraid. Same way, it's a very different thing, but jockeys will never talk about their fear of falling.
Because
you know, you don't want to start thinking about it too much. Yeah. And if you start thinking too much about the fact that you might be you might choke occasionally, then
but he knows he knows, and like, it's not the first time it's happened, you know. Yeah. Like he goes through these periods of building up expectation on himself, or the expectation comes. Look, Augusta every year is the best example, and doesn't quite get there. If it's something that he has to deal with, then maybe this is the best way to do it. Maybe it is the best way to come out and say, yeah, this is something I need to fix. I need to get a fix. And it'll only be fixed. Just as you know a choke when you see it, you'll know it's fixed when you see it.
Lawrence, you went even harder. You said the level of sycophancy towards Rory over the last couple of days has been nauseating. He's great, no question. But when things don't go his way, he has a high propensity to chuck it. Classic trait of golden child.
Well, it's deep psychology here, isn't it? That's what I deal in. That's what I trade in. I have long held this belief that he's one of these guys that just doesn't like adversity. If you look at his PGA Tour record, again, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think he's won 15 times in the PGA Tour, and only three of those have been squeakers. Every other one, he has just destroyed the field with his brilliance. You know, and when you've been brilliant since the age of 8, 9, 10 or whatever, and when everybody's been telling you that you're brilliant, and it gradually builds up, I think, through, you know, you build up this kind of mentality where when you get to, when something doesn't go exactly your way, you start to struggle. You know, sometimes you can get through it, you know, but Rory, his struggles have all come when he hits adversity. Now, anybody can hit a ball out of bounds on the first. That could happen to anybody.
And did.
But, you know, how do you respond to it? That's the thing. You know, how do you get over it? You know, Tiger. I mean, Tiger had a terrible record. People never really realised this, but he was a terrible, nervous person on the first tee in big moments. He had a terrible record in the first holes. You know, remember the 2008 US Open. Tiger double bogeyed the first hole on the Sunday. You know, but how do you respond to it? You know, and Tiger always, I mean, again, it's probably a bad example because he's the greatest of all time. But, you know, Tiger always, he saw adversity as something to embrace, as a challenge, as, you know, something to get his juices flowing. Rory, I think, you know, and it's because of this golden child kind of mentality, you know, I think he sometimes shrinks. You know, the idea of the three-putt on, and I know Friday was amazing. It was brilliant. You know, it was classic Rory, but he did it without any pressure. You know, there wasn't a lot of pressure on him. He was back in his comfort zone. But the idea of three-putting that from 5 or 6 feet on Thursday, that was just, I mean, that was, you know, negligent. You know, and again, that's slightly childish, isn't it? You know, why can't you just muscle up, you know, batten down the hatches and get it done? You know, that idea of, you know, Tiger doing that, or, you know, it's just unthinkable. And I think, you know, that's the issue with Rory. And I think that's what we saw. You know, okay, Friday was magnificent, but he was back in a kind of comfort zone, wasn't he? And he missed a cut, not because of what he did on Friday. He missed it because of that incident on Thursday on the 16th green, and then to triple bogey 18 on Thursday. I mean, it's just, you know, professional golfers at that level, world, you know, all-time generational talent level should not be doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, that was the point I was making.
Yeah, well, he did cop to that mistake on the 16th. You know, he did say that was the one thing that was totally inexcusable. Yeah, so I think he feels
why
himself.
Did he do it? You know, what's going on in his head that makes him do that? That's my point of interest in this. You know, because that's not there's no technical or physical explanation for that. You know, that is it's all mental. So what's the issue? That's it. You know, that's the question.
Let's finish with the winner, Shane Lowry. Mm. It's something Lawrence has alluded to earlier on. It's maybe an unfair question to ask the day after. I'm sure he's not thinking about it right now, wherever he is. But are there more majors in Shane Lowry?
Yeah, Shane Lowry's what, 32, 33? You would imagine he is the next 10 years to win another one. 40, a lot of good players around.
Does it even matter that much? It's a question we always ask. I guess it's nearly a year out of habit. But he's won his, like, it'd be lovely if he won another one.
I
but
would
sure,
suggest he's an open that, champion. That the next milestone on his list is the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
More so than
speaking about it
major.
Yesterday in a way that, you know, like my big aim is still the same.
Oh,
it's,
yeah,
hit that. Oh, I'd believe that with him. I think it kills a guy like that. He just, come on, he's the prototype person who's designed to play in a
team player.
The team element of a Ryder Cup and just dealing with the fans and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's perfect for him.
Yeah. So I would imagine that's the next big thing on his agenda. Like, obviously, look, he has the game. We all know that. I think he will pick off a tournament a year for the next few years. He should. Like, he's always very good out in the Middle East. He ought to maybe come through one of the match play tournaments, something like that. But there's a lot of good players around, and there's only four majors a year.
Malachy, brilliant stuff.
Cheers.
Lawrence, thank you so much.
All the best.
Won't you bring back all those colours to my dreams?
Don't be rumble, look like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
Don't give a damn about the money, being shot, take the title, take it all, and go to jail tomorrow.
This chump has got everybody scared. Scared of what?
You told him I don't have nothing but a prayer. Well, chump, all I need is a prayer, because if that prayer reaches the right man, not only will George Foreman fall, but mountains will fall.
Oh, my God, he's won the title back at 32.
This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny.
You saw him on television, there was no one more beautiful. You saw him walking down the street, he was a beautiful thing to see. He moved around the ring, he had style and class, he was tall and good looking. Everything you'd want from a boxer, wrestler, football player. And to be honest with you, he belonged to the arts because he had poem, poetry, he had it all.
Sugar Man met a false friend on a lonely, dusty road.
Specimen, fighting machine. You know, it was handsome, it was articulate, it was funny, charismatic. It was whooping ass, too.
Would we all like a little bit more Emily Scanlon in our lives?
Let's
Shane Lowry's granny?
Let's go. Do it.
He was always on the go. I had a turf box in the corner beside the range. And when I go up to the clothes and I pour him into it, he'd have all the turf mowed out and come back. So whether it worked his immune system or what, I don't know.
Eating
turf mold.
What?
Do you know what turf mold is?
No.
Well, basically, if you fill a bucket of turf, the little bit, tiny bits of turf will inevitably break
turf
off.
Turf dust.
Turf dust, basically.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, like, it's not just dust. I mean, some bits of it would be reasonably sizable.
Yeah, yeah.
So obviously, Shane
turf scree.
Yeah, Shane was helping himself to a little bit of that.
Eating handfuls.
And there's not a thing in the world wrong with it. Sure, didn't he win the British Open yesterday?
Fair play to him.
We will talk about the weekend's football with our football analyst, but only after we welcome them into this Shane Lowry celebration. Oisín, how's the form?
Owen, how's things?
Welcome in. Mike Quirk, how you doing?
Brilliant.
That's what I want to hear. That's exactly what I want to hear. It's that kind of a show. You've met the man himself, Oisín. This has emerged over the last 24 hours. You have touched the hem of his garment.
No, I actually, not just touched him, but I've given him a few tips on his putting as well. And
I thought it was
coincidentally, a year later,
here we are.
He wins the Open.
Now tell us what happened here, because this is just another classic Shane Lowry's a normal fella type story. So you tell this.
Well, the way it happened was he was coming out from, we were coming out from the bar in the Croke Park Hotel just after the All-Ireland final, and he was emerging from the other side from a corporate gig. I think it was maybe a Bank of Ireland gig or something. I think they sponsor him, but he had a few jars on board. I had a few jars on board, but definitely not as many as he had. And I'd met him a couple of times before. I'd been down in Esker Hills, I played there, and he said, any chance of getting a selfie, which did my street cred absolutely no harm.
So he went
whatsoever.
He wasn't the Open champion at the time.
But to bring the story on and not to make it about me, which I would love to.
Okay,
but
fair enough.
Not to make it about me.
Change the habit of a lifetime.
we got the photograph and that, and Graham Garrity was with me as well. He could photograph. And then one of the great moments was he actually called Graham Garrity Trevor Giles. And I've called Garrity Trevor Giles since. But there was a girl there called Olive. She does all the social media stuff with RTE. And she said, you know, she was trying to hold it together, but she failed miserably. And she said, hey, I'm Olive. She says, hey, I do all the social media stuff with RT. Would it be okay if I got a photograph with you? And she and Larry says, you're Olive then. He says, like, I've been watching the social media stuff all year, and like this, the woman just lost her mind then, basically. and so that was the way it ensued, and he went on about his business then, and we had it on elsewhere as well.
This is a big part of the charm, though, isn't it? That he's, you know, he's enormous, but also that he's like GAA people above all other sports people seem to love the guy because he loves the GAA so much, the family background, but he's there, he's a guy who's around the place.
Have you ever met his dad?
Haven't met him, no.
Well, if you meet his dad, you know exactly why Shane Lowry is the way he is, because I went down to play in a fundraiser for Offaly GAA. I was playing along with Niall McNamee, and we met Brendan Lowry in the way, and he stopped me and he was talking. And I brought the conversation to golf because I thought maybe that's where he wanted to go. It was Masters weekend. Shane Lowry was playing in the Masters. And Brendan Lowry says to me, I don't want to talk about golf. I want to talk about GAA. What do you think about X, Y, and Z? And that's sort of, again, the way. So anybody who knows Brendan will know that that Shane is the way he is because of the way he was brought up and because of Brendan.
Yeah, Mike. And I mean, you know, it's not kind of, you know, he goes to the All-Ireland semi-finals and finals. Like, you know, we've all seen photographs of him standing there in that, you know, the little stand they have in Clara watching a club game and not looking like, oh, you know, it's me, Shane Lowry, you know, professional golfer, slumming it for the day. He's actually watching it and he's interested in it. And, you know, his social media is inundated with, he's playing, you know, the Phoenix Open or the Waste Management Open or somewhere, and he's up at 8:30 in the morning watching GAA go. Like, you get the impression that it's not just a way for Shane Lowry to show that he's down to earth. He just literally loves the GAA and loves Gaelic football and hurling and can't stop watching it.
Yeah, and that's probably why people have taken to him. It just seems totally and utterly genuine with him, and he just seems like this kind of, you know, like down to earth, kind of really affable kind of a guy who is an incredible golfer. And like that whole, the whole story of his weekend or his week, the four days in the golf that he played. Like, I mean, I don't know what kind of tips Oisin gave him, but like his putting, his chipping, his short game. Like, it was just, it was class to see, like yesterday, sitting in Croke Park and hearing the stadium announcer repeatedly call out Shane Lowry, his four shots ahead or his five shots ahead, and his scorecard flashing up on the big screen. Like, I've never seen anything like that for any other sport. And it just shows you the regard that he's held within the GAA because of that kind of, the personality, I suppose, that he shows and how he's kind of one of everybody else. He's your everyman, really. And it's great to see those guys kind of getting their awards, I suppose.
And I think that's why, for a lot of people, even grown men, there was an emotional attachment to it. Even when I went home, I watched it back. BBC did 2 hours of coverage, highlights coverage, and I watched it back and I found myself sort of choking up. I got a text message from a guy who used to play Hurling with Limerick, and he said he was after sitting in the car and crying. Get my over, mum and dad, I thought, get over yourself, and then I went home and I found myself sort of choking up myself, you know?
And you knew the result yeah. before ours. But my mum and dad were too nervous to watch. They watched Kerry and Donegal rather than watch the golf because they were too nervous for him. Like, it's insane.
Which Rich Beam, even, the American commentator for Sky, who's a major winner himself, he was nearly crying at the end of it. Honestly, yeah. he was on the verge of tears, as they say. And he's going, so he's saying, this is just the most amazing thing I've ever seen in the sport, aside from, like, it's the best I've ever felt, he said, on a golf course, except when I won my own major. And the way he was talking, I think he felt almost better for Larry.
He's an honorary member of Art Glass, and he actually did some sort of preview night, and like, he talked a lot about Shane Larry and the great chance that Shane Larry had.
Oh, yeah. You know? Mike, that's mental. Just before we do start talking about the football, that it was that there were these updates going on at Croker. As you say, I don't remember that ever happening before. What sort of reaction was it getting? How regular was it? Was you know, he's chipping onto the seventh green, or you know?
Yeah, he duffed that one.
It wasn't quite the play-by-play, but it was you were getting kind of every second hole. Now the game was kind of captivating enough at times, so you were maybe losing track of it. But it was like you were getting regular updates, and I remember at halftime they put up his scorecard, and like every time they announced it, the whole stadium kind of erupted with a cheer, like, you know, Lowry has gone five shots ahead, and you know, everybody just was vocal and delighted about it. And It's bizarre. And like Oisín saying, oh, I wasn't quite as moved to tears, but like it was strange. It was strange in that it meant an awful lot to people who don't know anything about golf or who don't care about golf. But it was like, this guy is like, he's a GA guy, and he's punching above his weight, and he's knocking all the rest of them out of their way. And it was just it was strangely captivating for everybody, like golf people and the rest.
Luckily for the people at the game, because sometimes you can start thinking, geez, maybe I'm at the wrong event here. I like, should be at home watching.
Like Galway Kerry for the World Cup final last year, where literally yeah. the entire stadium was having the exact same
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Every World Cup final except this one has been a nil-all draw, or one-all, or one-nil.
Well, there were no issues this time around, because it was a really cracking game, Mike, wasn't it?
It was. It was the best game we've seen, you know, all season. And it was everything you possibly hoped for. You know, we kind of, you know, I'd been talking up Donegal for a long time, and I thought they were the ones that were going to be, you know, pushing Dublin the closest. And we weren't sure about Kerry because of maybe the way that Mayo collapsed the previous week. But, you know, it was just two really massive teams, you know, albeit Donegal missing, you know, Eoghan Gallagher, which is a complete sickener, and another couple of defenders, Neil McGee. And then they lost their two midfielders through the game. You know, Kerry without Dave Morn. But with all that, it was just, it's the game just had everything. There was no, you know, hugely negative stuff. It was all man for man, you know, kicking ball and a greasy surface, like really difficult conditions and the skill level and everything that you could want to see. Bit of dogging in it and fellas lamping off the ball a little bit too much at times. But the game was as billed. It was the best game we've seen from every angle. And both teams did, you know, gave themselves huge credit at the end of it.
We should also probably, Oisín, try and stop looking at these games through the prism of the Dubs constantly, you know, because I found myself watching it. It was like, well, okay, that's one thing, you know, that maybe they could take, and then just forget about it. Like, yeah. It's a brilliant game of football. There are two teams with a load of very good footballers. Who knows down the road? But as you're watching it, you should just be enjoying it rather than, you know, having that in the back of your mind all the time.
And that's a decision I made at the start of the year. I enjoyed the Ulster Championship for what it was. I enjoyed yesterday. I enjoyed both days for what they were, and tried not to. Like it is, it's the blue elephant in the room all the time. It's in your head. It's, you know, you're trying to make comparisons. You're trying to look at matchups, but just to sit back yesterday and enjoy that game for what it was, which was a tremendous game of Gaelic football, something we've been crying out for a long time. We've seen lots of close, entertaining games over the last number of years, but this was close, entertaining, and of a high quality.
Yeah, like the All-Ireland Final in 2017. Actually, yeah. like the 2016-2017 All-Ireland Finals. Yeah. Like, but that was the level that we were watching yesterday, as opposed to, you know, the sort of the down Armagh games. Like,
yeah.
This was, like, and what we saw really was, you know, massive pace in the game everywhere. But then also, I think one of the things that really fires people's imaginations are personal duels that, you know, that you can see, right, there's a winner and a loser here, and that's going to have a big impact on the game. So you had Stephen McMenamin on Clifford, which was obviously huge. Ryan McHugh on Gavin White for the first half. Tom O'Sullivan doing a brilliant job on Jamie Brennan. This is stuff that people just really enjoy watching.
And how often have we watched Donegal over the years and thought, I actually don't know who to credit with, you know, their defensive display, whereas yesterday it was man on man. You talk about, arguably the two best man marking jobs were O'Sullivan on Jamie Brennan and McManaman on Clifford. Even though I still think Clifford comes out of yesterday's game with a huge amount of kudos. Even more so than going down, being in Killarney, shooting the lights out. I just think yesterday, because he kept wanting, he kept showing, he won break ball, he just wanted to add. He realised, I think he realised after 20 minutes, it wasn't going to be an easy day. But I think, you know, just even his last score just says so much about him as a young lad. Because yesterday, people just looking in and going, nah, Clifford's been poor today. Whereas in actual fact, I take a hell of a lot away from the game from a David Clifford point of view. But McManaman, I've called him, he's now done a job on, he's done a job on some of the top forwards, first of all in Ulster, in particular Matty Donnelly. I mean, he beat Matty Donnelly up a stick. Matty Donnelly ended up getting man of the match against Cork the other day. And he did well again on Clifford, and that's something that Donegal have added, because when I seen Steve McManaman play before, I didn't think there's no way in the last 2 years he had this in his locker.
So what does he have in his locker? How is he able to shut down or at least minimise the influence of these really talented footballers, particularly in an open game like we saw at the weekend?
Okay, so I think what has changed dramatically over the last number of years, probably the last 6 or 7 years, is that there is no more stoppers. You know, there's no more genuine just, this is what I am, I'm a defender. My job is to stop my man, and I don't necessarily need to add anything else to my game. If I can do that job, and there's a real lack of those guys out there, and Stephen McManaman has turned into one of those guys. He was a guy that Donegal introduced, give him 10 minutes, do a bit of foraging around the middle area, expected to get on break ball. When he did get on it, popped the ball sideways. You'd never seen Stephen McManaman going forward, kicking scores. You never see him rangy outside of the book, kick passes or points with outside. But you never see any of that from him. But I didn't think he had this tigerish corner back to him, because he's quite a big guy. He's quite languid. He's probably bulked up a little bit. He's probably a lot stronger than he has been. Like Matty Donnelly's an extremely strong guy, and I watched him closely that day, and I thought he was exceptional at him, and he was again exceptional at the weekend, because he's just a stopper. And not just a stopper, but he is what he says in the tin. He's a corner back who just wants to take the best man that the opposition have and shut him down. And sometimes what I've seen over the last, that a lot of players are not just happy enough with that they want to be adding and they want to be seen on the ball. He doesn't seem to be like that.
That's interesting. A really interesting way of putting it, Mike, because as O'Sheen says, that does seem to be the way it's gone, that there's an idea everyone has to be able to create, to go forward, all that kind of stuff. But actually, there's obvious positions in a Gaelic football team that if you just do that job really well, aside from just the defensive stability that gives you, it also helps your attacking platform. It also means other guys around you, the half backs and so on, can get forward, and people can leave you just one-on-one with that kind of a player.
I suppose the reason that we haven't seen these guys emerge in the last couple of years is because, you know, most teams have gone with, like, we're going to give them a lot of protection and we're going to drop bodies back. So that takes the pressure off the kind of one-on-one matchup. So you haven't seen these fellas emerge, because you're talking about Neil McGee maybe being an all-star. And you're saying, Jesus, like, I could play full-back for Donegal 4 years ago because they have 13 men inside the 45-yard line constantly. So it's not that Neil McGee is particularly awesome that one season. It's just he's got a load of help. Whereas what we're seeing now from Donegal is, like, McMenamin is actually just really, really good one-on-one in these situations, because if he wasn't, there's no way in the world that they would be leaving, you know, the Kerry forwards as exposed on the Donegal backs as they were yesterday. And like, that is something they've improved. But like on the other side of the ball, is the same way on, like the forwards they're now producing is are of a hugely high quality. Like, I mean, we all know about, you know, Murphy and McBrearty, like Oisin Gallen came on yesterday and like showed like an absolute elephant sized pair of balls to kick through the scores that he did. You know, one of the one with his left leg where he came off the wing. He wasn't looking to dish it to McBrearty, to Murphy or anybody. He was looking for responsibility to go and put the ball over the bar. And like that's like Donegal have always been that perception of, you know, hard defensive edge and we'll build from there. But like they're actually a really, really impressive attacking outfit. Like Jamie Brennan has probably been their most effective forward next to Murphy all season. And like Tom Sullivan did an unbelievable job, a job that I wasn't sure he was capable of doing, and completely nullified Jamie Brennan in the game. And as the game progressed and he went further out the field, you know, probably the counter of what we're talking about, Tom Sullivan became the aggressor and the attacker in that role. But like it's just how good they are offensively as well as defensively now, I think, has seen the big jump in them again this year.
The Kerry kick out wobbled in the last 5 or 6 minutes, having in fairness been very good. I mean, 21 of 26 kickouts won of their own kickouts. But do you think there's still a question mark over Shane Ryan? Is there still, you know, a couple of, do you think that the opponents left will really focus on Kerry's kick out?
But sure, definitely, Murph. I mean, as you go up and the competition gets sharper and sharper, all of these things are going to become exacerbated and are going to be highlighted. And like the opponent's kick out on every team is a crucial facet of the game and how you're going to get easier scores. Like, I thought for the vast majority of the game yesterday and the same against Mayo, I thought his kickouts were really solid. And like the biggest part of the kickout is that if we want to move the ball away from a contest, you have to have people in space that are able to receive that ball. And like Jonathan Lyon did a good job of it after coming on. He picked up two out in the Cusick stand side of the pitch. Like the couple of ones that he gave away, you could say, all right, put 60% blame on him, but it's 40% on the guys who have to do a better job of getting open and making a much easier lane for him to go. Like there wasn't a whole pile of them that were miskicked or misdirected, maybe one or two, but in the main, like if Kerry lost the kick out, it was because it had to go into a bit of a contest. And like, you know, that's going to be the same thing as we go. Like Dublin's kick out, as good as Cluxton is, are going to come under more pressure in the next couple of games. Same with Mayo, same with Donegal, same with everybody. And that's what the best teams do. They're going to go at an area that they think they can get joy out of. And look, for Kerry still, that's a work in progress.
Mayo got the win they needed, Oisin, to stay in the hunt. They're going to have to win again next weekend, though. And they laboured in parts. Was it enough, given that really what that game was about was surviving in the championship and just steadying the ship, just proving to themselves that we haven't actually collapsed this season? Or would you be looking for a little bit more than what you saw?
No, I going into the game, I was just thinking,
win the match.
Mayo just have to win the game, because win the game, and the 2 weeks for them is crucial. I think of all the teams that can benefit, I think the 2 weeks now will benefit them massively. They just wanted to still be there. And I'm sure watching the second game keenly, and a draw probably suits them okay. It doesn't really affect what's going to happen. It's a do or die game then there. I imagine that there's another bit of a upsurge in performance with Mayo than what we've seen so far, and there's going to have to be. But you would think that there's still a massive game in that outfit. I do believe that. But we're still going back to, they're still going back to Andy Moore. Andy Moore completely changed the way Mayo played. Even last week when he came on in Killarney, he changed things because, like, the movement of the Mayo forwards, just not good enough. Just not good enough for inside forwards. Everything is towards the ball. A lot of times when they move, they move in threes and they move all towards the ball. When Andy Moore come in, he moved directly across the 21. He's getting the ball deeper. He gives the opportunity for the likes of Fionn McDonagh and boys like that to come on to the ball. You know, don't be surprised if there is a new two-man full forward line. Cohen can do a job in there along with Andy Moore, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to ask, Horan doesn't seem to think so. He doesn't seem to think that that you can carry both Darren Cohen and Andy Moore.
I agree, but I just think that Mayo will have to watch forensically now those two games. going bouncing from one game to the next probably doesn't give them a massive opportunity to take stock of everything. But I think if they take stock of it, that Andy Moran and Cohen with O'Connor maybe playing off them, because O'Connor doesn't suit you know, inside. He needs to be the third man in the triangle or whatever, or floating around the half forward line and supporting, because he finished the game strongly, you know, in that role. But I think Cohen and Moran are the answer, because Cohen's runs of them all is not perfect, but they're better than the likes of Carr and O'Connor. So maybe those two guys inside. Mayo have learned a lot from the last couple of weeks, but they just need one. They need to turn it into one of those manic Mayo outings. Yeah. Everything is up for grabs.
That's very fine. Yeah,
everything's up for grabs.
Yeah. Well, they didn't do it against Kerry, I suppose.
They should have that. Well, they should have that in the locker, because they know that this is do or die for them.
I sometimes think there is an overreaction to these big Dublin victories that seem to be happening every week now. You know, because I just thought the Cork game was really entertaining, and Cork had a go, and Cork are a team that are relegated to Division 3, so you'd expect them to take a beating off the best team in the country. But there did seem to be something maybe a little bit different this week. They're playing the Connacht champions, a team who've beaten Mayo and Galway, a team who, you know, on paper, sure, you would think might be able to do something, and yet it didn't happen. Murph, I know you felt the occasion just as a whole was a bit of an L drag.
Well, it was just like a combination of three things that really annoy people. You know, so one, there was a stadium that was, you know, more than well over like 30,000 people, I think. Well, 36, I think they came up with, but it looked like less than that. The complete lack of a contest in a Dublin game. And the third thing, then, the fact that it was on Sky. And it was just a confluence of events that kind of spoke to what, you know, GA critics say the GA is now becoming, which, you know, did kind of put people a little ill at ease, Mike.
It did, and it was an uncomfortable watch. It was like, you know, like the problem is, like, Dublin supporters now are even getting bored with it. All of us find it's a struggle to get anything positive to talk about or to look at it. Our supporters of Roscommon are saying, like, we're after winning our province here. Like, we're after beating two of the teams that everybody is talking about at the start of the year of being contenders with Dublin. And it just looked to me like from the throw-in, Roscommon looked like they were about to take a beating, that they were you know, they knew themselves that they were going into a fight with their arms tied behind their back, and they didn't have the capabilities to actually, you know, really put it up to them in the way that they did the previous week. And maybe there was like a mental letdown that they really felt that, you know, a chance against Tyrone at home, you know, even though it was a 4-point game, it may have been probably a little bit more comfortable for Tyrone than that. But maybe that was their chance gone. And if they had won that game, that they'd have something to cling on to against Dublin, whereas they just looked, you know, after Dermot Murta's point, the second point of the game, they just looked like a beaten docket. And it was like, Jesus, you were looking at the clock saying, lads, is there any chance of fast-forwarding this thing? Because it was no good for anybody. Dublin had got no value out of it. Roscommon certainly didn't. And, you know, I saw Anthony Cunningham after, and fair play to him. Like, he came out and he was actually kind of half smiling. And, you know, I suppose, what else could a guy do? He was just, he was in the end of a beatdown that they probably knew was coming.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Croke Park round of matches isn't working, you know, like, it's not.
Why,
like, Cork,
why are you smiling at you?
Because even Murph's voice has gone downbeat.
We've sucked all the energy out of this up to now extremely high energy show. Yeah, but hang on, I think you've got something coming here.
Well, yeah, I mean, Tyrone and Cork shouldn't have been played in Croke Park. And, like, you know, when you look at Mayo, Kerry, Donegal are the teams, you know, 2, 3 and probably 5 left. And even the three of them couldn't, you know, get over 50,000 plus Meath. Like, Meath is on Croke Park's doorstep. Like, the crowds just aren't there for this. I mean, I literally can't believe I'm going to say this, but should the GAA actually be pumping money into one stadium in the Midlands? Build another stadium. But, like, which is in itself crazy. But, like, they do need a stadium that is 30,000 that actually has facilities. You know what I mean? Because, like, you know, I think maybe it's the fact that my parents are getting older that I actually notice this stuff more now. But, you know, stadiums, they do need to be, you know, if not all seater, then like three quarters all seater. They need to have functioning bathrooms. They need to, you know, have food. Like this stuff is actually important for how people consume the games. But like, Port Leash is not there or anywhere near it. Tullamore isn't there yet. They have one stand that's nice, and then the rest of it is just like, you know, you stand on a terrace or whatever. Like, should they actually be investing in a stadium where that can actually hold these games? And you still have the benefits of a top quality stadium without having to bring it to Croke Park, because like Tyrone and Cork, whatever about Dublin and Roscommon, Tyrone and Cork suffered massively because it was played in front of probably 11,000, 10,000 people.
The Murph Bowl, we'll call this new stadium proposal. No, but seriously, what about the idea?
Yeah, no, it's a decent idea. It's a decent idea, and I think, you know, regardless of where that stadium is, obviously it's more central the better, but regardless of where that stadium is, anybody who's in Croke Park on Saturday would not really have enjoyed their experience, because Cork and Tyrone was actually quite decent in that Cork really, you know, went at them, really.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the game. Like, the game was really good.
Played really good stuff. Then, you know, you wonder, Tyrone going to stick or twist at halftime, come out at halftime. Didn't really change that much, but looked like a team that had a lot more energy about them. So, like, the actual game itself was worthy of a better atmosphere than what we experienced. A 30,000-seater stadium suits, I think, a lot of people down to the ground. I think it could be huge use made out of it, but
who pays for this?
Not going to happen.
Is GA at central level? I'm not saying the money's not there, but
yeah, you know, the GA at central level, you know, pick. But again, it's like, have a plan, you know, rather than just be like, okay, everyone wants a stadium, so everyone gets £2 million, you know. Instead, it's like, if it's Port Leash, it's Port Leash. If it's Tullamore, it's Tullamore. Like, Port Leash's ground is whatever it is. There's two exits off the motorway. It's, you know, it is very accessible for like a large proportion of the country. You know, like, again, it's like, my concern isn't really, but like, who pays for it is kind of nearly beside the point, because the GAA have money. Like, they've tons of money for, particularly for capital investment. I mean, I don't think it's ever going to be a problem. And if you actually intend on playing the hurling quarterfinals there and the football Super 8 round or quarterfinals, you know, two quarterfinals every year, like, it'll pay for itself. Do you know what I mean? It actually will pay for itself.
Well, yeah, but then you're not going to be able to sell your long-term Croker tickets if people aren't going to, you know, they're selling a lot of these tickets on the basis that you're getting. I'm not saying...
Well, the tickets were actually sold on the basis of the old system, which was four quarterfinals, you know, as opposed to the four that they had this week plus Dublin's one. Do you know what I mean? Like,
how many people are actually utilizing these tickets at the moment in the Super 8s at Croke Park? Maybe
there's ways around everything, you know. But I do feel like this, you know, the last weekend was really, really good. Like, the Super 8s weekend, the first weekend was really, really good, and it was really good because the games felt like huge occasions. Like, if you couldn't watch the game in Killarney and not say, like, I have no idea what's going on here, but this seems important to people. Whereas you watch Tyrone and Cork and you're like, imagine, like, if you're sitting down to watch this, like, well, this is like a pre-season game.
Mike?
Like, I do not agree that we should be spending more money on a new stadium. I think if you want to go and spend and revamp somewhere, that's fine. But, like, I think the investment, and we spoke about this before, the investment needs to be in people. The reason they're not going to the games is because it's not competitive. They know me, there are, you know, Cork to a lesser extent because they got the hurling going on. They know that they're going in here to an inevitable conclusion that they're not competitive. They have no chance of winning this thing. So, like, a new stadium to cope for 30,000, that's great. But, like, ultimately, I would prefer, if you're talking about a capital investment of maybe, I don't know, how much is a new stadium going to set you back? Like, 10 million, 15 million, 20 million?
Yeah, I
would much prefer to see that money getting pumped into those counties that are the Meads and the people that are struggling to actually become competitive, and go invest and get people there who know what they're doing to try and get the whole thing going in 5 to 10 years' time. Like, I just think put in 2 million to some stadium there above in Thurles or something and try and get that up to a better scratch. But Jesus, to take all that money and go to look at more bricks and mortar when that's not going to help the competition. It's about trying to get people in there to help them go in the right direction.
Yeah, there is a large part of me, Mike, that actually agrees with that agrees with that. But I mean, at the same time, with Croke Park, yeah, it is. It's an odd one. Like I know we've spent so much money on stadiums that it seems mad to try and build another one. But really, this is what should have happened 20 years ago. You know, that they should have. Yeah. They should have earmarked one grand to put a ton of money in, and then every other grand is 12,000, 15,000, and leave it at that. But, you know, I suppose you can't go around making plans, remaking plans that were made 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah, but I think in each province we need to now have a stadium, which Murph talked about, you know, as far as the corporate end of things, as far as catering for people of all ages, that we identify one stadium and we pump it. A load of money into them, bring them up to standard, and then maybe you've got somewhere to bring those Super 8 games, you know, all of them.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Oisin, brilliant. Mike, thank you so much.
Thanks.
You are.
A big schmazzle just in front of the Kerry goal. Bit of a dust up, folks, in the left corner back position. The physio's involved out there now, is she, from Mayo, look?
He is, yeah.
Stewards now, is she, are pulling off a spectator.
A spectator after coming in. A spectator and three,
that's crazy
four stewards.
Stuff,
that's crazy stuff, yeah.
You don't want to see
four,
that, like.
And I tell you, it's taken five. One, two, three, four stewards to hold him and
he's
bring
him back.
He's
a strong man, isn't he?
Here's Colin McFadden. Colin McFadden's going to Ryan McKee. The ball's over the net. The ball's over the net. Ryan McKee.
The kick out again in an absorbing semi-final. Anthony Maher brings it down from the cloud.
They hand pass it over to Colin McFadden. This is the goal for Donegal. Yes! Colin McFadden.
Tight angle. Paul Gainey with the kick. And Paul Gainey with the point.
We're watching to see what McQuillan's going to do. Score! Donegal are back in an All-Ireland final.
And the referee says it's all over.
What an absolutely amazing result by Kerry. What wonderful football by the Kingdom. Up Kerry, up the Kingdom, up Eamon Fitzmaurice, up to Dublin for the All-Ireland.
Some game.
All right, I think that's almost it for the day. Although I do know, Ken, there's a burning question that you had late last week that I probably need to answer for you.
Yes. Which is?
Come on, Ken. Ken, you're obviously
it's a
the question we were talking about.
It's a two-prong question. One, did I have a great time at the Open, the
yeah.
British Open, call it what you will.
And then the
yes,
second one, Ken, of course, obviously.
Did
the
my relationship with my father-in-law survive our experience spending two evenings in the official campsite at the University of Coleraine?
How did it go?
University of Ulster, Coleraine campus. Went very well. Thankfully, the two-man tent was, they were very generous with the size of the tent. It was almost like a four-man tent.
Oh, so it wasn't your tent. It
no,
was
they put
their
it up.
Oh,
it's kind of glamping, you know.
Oh, so it was two golf men tent.
This yeah,
is, it's like,
yeah,
like
yeah.
a like an apartment.
Like yeah, they weren't slumming it going up there, putting up our own tents.
Like a small, very fashionable boutique hotel.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
well
yeah,
that's
all yeah.
Oh, right. Okay,
yeah,
well, it's different from what I had envisaged. You know, I kind of seen you boat line just
no.
sort of. In sort of contact with each other.
No,
you know,
I mean, we're a million miles off, but no, all
would you believe?
Well.
Would you believe, yeah. Ken, that by a quite bizarre chain of events, I met Owen's father-in-law this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
I interviewed him in depth.
Interviewed him.
About,
did he have any complaints?
No, absolutely no complaints. Yeah. He said Owen was a perfect gentleman.
I had no complaints as well. I mean, some would say 4:30 a.m. is quite an early rising time. But
yeah,
listen, that's look.
He's
this
a man
is not
of
the
sea.
He is
mean,
a man of
on,
the sea.
Then.
Yeah,
he
yeah,
rises
yeah.
with the sun.
He's got discipline. He actually gets up when you're supposed to. Probably your body's supposed to get up. Some of us just like to lie in a little longer.
You need your 9 hours on.
Tent or no tent.
Does that make me some kind of monster?
There's sun beaming into my eyes, and I'm like, no, I can say asleep at 8 a.m. That's not a bother. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks, Murph. There'll be more Larry talk, I'm sure, on the World Service tomorrow. I didn't let you say thanks back.
Thank you, Owen. Thank
Hang
you,
on, what's this? This is probably live Shane Lowry, is it? Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Shane Lowry is somewhere in Dublin doing this right now, so go find him. That's your challenge for the rest of your Monday. Enjoy.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.